Welcome back. I'm Jim Fannin. Today we're talking alternative fuels, specifically ammonia. On the phone with me today is the founder of Hydrofuel Inc., Greg Vesna. Greg, tell us a little bit about your plight, for lack of a better term, and how's things working out trying to bring an alternative fuel to the market?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jim. Well, this has been about a 35-year effort, but I'm not the only person that's been trying to do this. Most people don't know that ammonia is a fuel. It's made up of hydrogen and nitrogen. There's more hydrogen in a pound or a unit of ammonia than there is hydrogen in any hydrocarbon fuel, which are mostly carbon, or even in liquid hydrogen. So ammonia is an easy, neat way to use hydrogen fuel, and it's much easier to store and handle hydrogen as ammonia than it is to use it almost in any other way, certainly not better than liquid hydrogen.
Well, that's been the drawback of hydrogen, is that you need a fuel cell, which requires precious earth materials, and or the hydrogen's just unstable at a normal temperature. So
well,
storage and transportation of such
is
tough.
Life cycles for equipment and all these other issues. But, you know, there's no question that ammonia can be used as a fuel and will be and has been, you know, since before we used hydrocarbons. Originally, there were streetcars and other vehicles that ran on ammonia where it was heated, it's gas, and they'd expand and provide propulsion. Rudolf Diesel, the inventor of the diesel engine, built ammonia engines before he went to diesel and hydrocarbons because they were easier to handle, and they went from a steam or compression-based technology to an internal combustion engine where you burn a fuel. But, you know, ammonia was used for the X-15 rocket, which was fueled on ammonia and oxygen, and it's the fastest. It still has a record from the 1960s of the fastest anything has ever flown at Mach 7. There's a lot of energy there if you can store it and handle it and liberate it, and it turns out that it's very much like propane. But it is also caustic and toxic, like anything is toxic in big enough amounts, so you have to handle it properly. But ammonia is the second most manufactured commodity on Earth. People don't realize how many there's hundreds of millions of tons of this stuff made annually and used manufacturing. And there's pipelines, you know, up the middle of America, 5,000 miles. So, you know, it's used on a massive way already in agriculturally and in manufacturing, and it has an exemplary safety record. People hear about accidents. There are always accidents.
Sure.
The safety record, you know, per metric ton mile delivered of ammonia, as opposed to any other form of energy, liquid fuel, et cetera, is night and day. It's like 1 in 1,000th. The number of accidents or deaths. So we have an infrastructure we can use to use ammonia as a fuel, and we have a lot of people with a lot of experience dealing with it in the heating and air conditioning industry and other industries that could, you know, easily use be trained to use it for automotive purposes and power generation. So it really is a wonderful little fuel out there, and there's a lot more sunlight, water, and air and wind on Earth than there is, you know, tar sands.
Now, what's it going to take as far as modifications to the average, typical car engine?
Well, you wouldn't go to...
Or is that something we don't want to go to?
Well, you wouldn't... The consumer market is probably, unfortunately, the last place you're going to go.
Okay.
You know, 50% of transportation energy demand is in fleets and trucks. And they have centralized fuel stations, and it's much easier to enter in that market. But there's also a huge market for it in agricultural use because farmers have their own ammonia tanks already.
Right.
And the beauty of it is, and you know, we have this whole infrastructure to deliver ammonia. The manufacturers fill up these storage tanks for 6 months, and in a couple of weeks, the farmers empty them all, and then they fill up again. But if it was used for a fuel, and it will run, you know, farm equipment just like a propane conversion, essentially, it'll run generators, it'll run, you know, stuff on a farm. If the inventory became throughput instead of stored, you know, you could fuel probably 10% of the vehicles. According to U.S. study, you could fuel 90% of the vehicles in the 100 largest cities in the United States on ammonia with the existing infrastructure if you just built the fuel stations. And you can't do that with any other fuel, you know, unless it's a hydrocarbon, right?
Got it. What about distribution?
Well, that's your distribution issue, right? So you got a huge infrastructure that is stationary used for storage that you now make throughput. and you now move it through it like you do with pipelines instead of storing it. And you got a huge even if we started tomorrow, Jim, it would take us 50 years to totally get off hydrocarbons. Okay, this isn't something that's going to happen overnight.
Right.
But we could replace 10% of our hydrocarbon use with ammonia using an existing infrastructure. And if we manufactured the ammonia from green sources or captured the carbon in it and then, made it urea and then stop fertilizing with ammonia, fertilizer with urea, and then you don't have the runoff, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we could eliminate 10% of the energy we use on Earth to make that ammonia from hydrocarbons. And we can eliminate 10% of the CO2 emission. And it doesn't cost more money to do it than what we're doing now. In fact, it actually costs less because you get more money for the two tons of urea than you do for the one ton of ammonia.
So where are you finding that you're getting stopped and politically or out in the marketplace? What's the holdback?
Honest to God, I think it's probably because they don't believe it's too good to be true. There's now so much research that's come out, especially in the last year, about this, and in fact, the research study says exactly that. There's an IEE report, which is the largest association in the world of scientific technical people, and it came out with a report in November of 2012 called the Dual Fuel Strategy, and it said this report is based on a 1980 report, which is based on a 1965 report done by a Professor Green, of course.
Yeah.
And Professor Green said to America, and this is when the military was building ammonia cars and trains and trucks and planes for the U.S. military, right? And they were building them, General Motors and all the big boys, defense contractors, everybody's there. But they were going to use portable nuclear reactors to make the fuel. And when they figured out that didn't work, then they killed the whole back end of the project. But they utilized the technology in every way, and they knew how to do it. And so this 2012 report says, we can't believe that they're not doing this already. Like, what's wrong? Because it's known that you can do it. So I think the biggest resistance, obviously there's resistance to change. Obviously there's vested interests. I can tell you that the province of Ontario, when they did their green plan, and if they had not subsidized anything and done full cost accounting on polluting products, healthcare costs, et cetera, we'd be a lot further down the renewable energy road, and we wouldn't, be given $5 and $6 billion subsidies to Samsung in Korea.
It certainly would. We're looking to level the playing field, I guess is what you're saying, with the subsidies, right?
Exactly. Stop picking the winners and losers.
Which the government traditionally is not very good at.
Which governments love to do. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't have unfettered free enterprise because under the NAFTA agreement, the Americans will want to sell rat poison to our children or get paid not to. So, you got to be careful with the balance. But, what's the bottom line? Oh, we're going to subsidize this thing here and this thing here, and we're going to make you put them there and there, and this is going to be our strategy, except when they did this thing, they didn't have a strategy. They didn't do any analysis. This is well known. And had they done site analysis, and had they done infrastructure comparisons, and had they said, okay, what do we have that we're flushing into our sewer system or our lakes? Oh, we have agricultural runoff. We have, hog farms and pig farms. Oh, well, that's ammonia, and we're flushing it into our systems and dealing with it. We can actually turn it into a fuel cheaper than we can do biomass, cheaper, than we can use methane. So if they'd analyzed the thing, if they'd sat down and looked at what are the, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25-year consequences and comparisons and compared that to shutting coal plants and then opening natural gas plants for 25 years because they can't handle their green power, they would have done it entirely differently.
Greg Vesna is my guest. Greg, after the break, we were just going to set this up for a quick break, and after the break, I want you to tell me who's in your pocket, who have you talked to, who's supporting you on this, and what's the next step for you. Greg Vesna is my special guest. We're talking about alternative fuels today on the Jim Fannin Show. You're listening to 610 CKTV.